p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Gotta go now, John, before they take off and leave me. Nice meeting you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 16th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 13th through 16th at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. The Northwest String Summit is a four-day celebration of Americana and bluegrass music hosted by the Yonder Mountain String Band. Guests include Green Sky Bluegrass, Elephant Revival, Fruition, Blitz and Trapper, the Shook Twins, and many, many more. Again, that's the 16th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 13th through 16th at Horning's Hideout, 21277 Northwest Brunswick Canyon Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information about the festival, performers, parking, and admission can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Welcome to July Black Book Talk. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman here with
O.B. Hill. Let's read, walk, and talk.
We have a special guest this month. Last month we told you we had Dr. Robert Greer as our guest, and something happened with our connection. Well, for real this month, he is here. Welcome, Dr. Greer.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for coming back. So you have written a book called Astride the Pink Horse.
Yeah, that's actually not my latest novel. That's the latest one in print. The latest one I've written is not quite out yet. But Astride the Pink Horse is the last novel I wrote.
Excellent. How many books have you written?
I've written 14.
And
yeah, they range from mysteries to medical thrillers to what they would refer to as literary fiction.
Some of them are part of a series, right?
Which one was? I didn't hear you.
Some of them are part of a series, right?
The Astride a Pink Horse is not part of the series. That's has new characters in it.
How many are in the series?
There are, seven. I have to count here for a moment. Either seven or eight in the series.
Okay. And Astride a Pink Horse, is it going to be the beginning of a new series?
Well, it is. It can be standalone, or it could be part of a new series. I wrote it, and then I took a couple of years off to write one of my medical textbooks over, and then I started writing a second book in that series, but I only wrote about 60 pages of it, and then for some reason I got interested in a story about the central character C.J. Floyd, who's in all my mystery novels. So I wrote that novel instead. So I've got 60 pages of that second novel in that series, which features a black female fighter pilot, named Bernadette Cameron, and so she's a central character along with her the man who becomes her love interest, a guy named Cozy Casilla, who's a one-time baseball player who's turned into a journalist.
I love that character named Cozy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a strange name. His real name, of course, is not Cozy, but he got the name, and most people would think, well, it's a contraction of Casilla, because his last name, that's his last name, but it's not. He really got the name Cozy because he was a baseball player, and he was able to slip in to second base in such a cozy manner for the pickoff play from the pitcher to the second baseman to get the opposition out, that he earned the nickname Cozy. So that's how he got his nickname, at least fictionally.
Well, I want to interject right here and say to the listeners, Patricia Hill Welch has just joined us. Yay.
Hi, good morning, everybody. And good morning, Dr. Greer.
How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to talk to you again.
Good. I'm happy to be able to talk to you again.
Great.
Well, listen, when you talk about these new characters that you introduce, how do you come about creating them?
The character for the female fighter pilot actually, which is true nowadays, of course, actually came from the fact that I have an uncle who was a two-star general who's now 95 and looks like he's about 60. And he was one of the first black generals among that group of generals that came from Chappie James and those World War II Tuskegee Airmen, although my uncle was a field artillery officer. And so I've kept in touch with him, and he always said that women could fly planes as well as men. And he was an Army officer. He said, why shouldn't they be able to? They didn't think that the Tuskegee Airmen could fly planes as black aviators.
That's
why
right.
Shouldn't women be able to fly planes? And he said that 50 years ago. So I sort of always remembered that. And so I decided I was just going to have this fighter pilot who was an aviator who was happened to be black, who was a woman, and use her as a central character.
Well, for those who aren't familiar with your work, and just as a little teaser, could you give us just a little bit of the plot for Astrida Pink Horse?
Well, in Astrida Pink Horse, what happens is that they find a military veteran in a missile silo in isolated or desolate Wyoming, and he's hanging upside down naked by his knees. And the missile silo, there are lots of missile silos that are still out around the heartland in Wyoming and Colorado and New Mexico and North Dakota. And so they find this guy hanging in there, and that triggers the action, because Cozy Casilla is assigned to go find out what happened. And so as a reporter, he goes and investigates the story. And then Bernadette Cameron comes along because she's the Air Force officer who's assigned to the investigation of this dead former sergeant. And interestingly, at that point, she's not flying jets anymore because she was grounded because she has hay fever. And they don't allow you to fly billion-dollar aircraft if you have hay fever. That's actually true.
I was going to say, this is the truth?
That's the absolute truth, yeah. So you get grounded, you cannot fly, because you have to be able to put on an oxygen mask at, 50,000 feet and still operate a complex machine. And you can't, with hay fever, there's a risk there. And so they ground you. They won't let you fly if you've got it.
Darn, that's the only reason I'm not a fighter pilot. Okay, I'm sorry, go on. No, I'm sorry, continue. So, okay, so she's been grounded. She's investigating. She's the military investigator, and then Cozy is the news for the reporter investigator.
Yeah, he's basically a reporter, yes.
Yeah. Any other interesting people? Well, we know that. You want to mention another interesting character?
Well, there are several interesting characters in the novel. There are a couple of Japanese characters, Americans of Japanese extraction who are in the novel, and they're very pivotal to the novel because one of them was in an internment camp during World War II, fictionally, that was in Wyoming. And so she plays a role in the novel, as well as her nephew, who's sort of a very eccentric mathematician and physicist. And so those two characters become suspects in the novel because of their connection to the dead man. I don't want to give away all the story, but they're connected to the dead man that they find as well, and so they become suspects. And then there's a rancher involved in the novel who's a sort of also a really off-center sort of person who has no use for the government, and he becomes pivotal in the novel's
okay, now I don't want you to do it to be a spoiler. Okay, we just want to a little bit. And also, your characters are always so it's not all are eccentric, but you do have some interesting and left of center character wise people in most of your books, so it's just good for our listeners to know that, you know, that you'll meet some new people in reading your books.
Yeah, there are lots of very different people, and one of the things I like to use is, because I live in Denver, I use, of course, the Rocky Mountain region in the West is a setting for my novels, and so the backdrop of the Rocky Mountains always exists in the novels as sort of a character, if you can look at it metaphorically, and so that the region always plays a significant role in the novel, and in this particular novel, In Astride a Pink Horse, the principal part of the region that's involved is Wyoming. And you may say, well, what are black people doing in Wyoming? There are plenty of black people in Wyoming. Just black cowboys, ranchers, farmers, people who work in the coal industry, which is, you know, Wyoming's quite a energy hot spot. So there certainly are African Americans in Wyoming. Wyoming's not very populated, though. It's only got 550,000 people.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so it's not even populated. It's not the population of Wyoming. The entire state is less than Denver.
Now, do you go to these places and do your historical research so you can be accurate?
Yes, I do. I actually own a cattle ranch in Wyoming. I have a cattle ranch. It's a working cattle ranch about 175 miles from Denver. So I'm up there all the time. The research I had to do for this particular novel, I had to do a lot of research on the military, of course, the Air Force, and then on nuclear weapons and missile silos. And at one time, we had 1,100 nuclear missile silos active in the U.S. Can you imagine that? 1,100 ICBMs loaded with a nuclear warhead. Now, they certainly won't tell you how many there are left, but clearly there are plenty left.
Yeah.
So they're still out there. So I went to a missile silo and researched what it looked like. There's one about 7 miles from my ranch called Tango 11. So I went to that silo, and I actually hopped the fence, and it's got lots of signs on it that says, do not trespass, you know, threat of going to jail and all that sort of stuff. And I just jumped over the fence, which is probably 15 feet high, and went in. Now, it's not active. That silo certainly wasn't active. It was deactivated. But people always ask me, are you afraid that something will happen, you know, because I've done trespassing like that before, trespassing for research on other novels. And my answer is always the same. Of course, I'm not afraid at all. And I'm very dogmatic about it, and I guess I could be somewhat elitist about it, unfortunately. I always say, are you serious? Do you actually think they're going to take a professor at a university who thinks he's a scholar at least, and they're going to actually do something to me? All I'm going to get is a slap on the wrist, say, don't do that anymore, and go home. And they say, well, how can you be sure of that? Mm-hmm. I say, they don't even put you in jail for murder in America nowadays. Do you think they're gonna do something to me? Well, that really stops people in their tracks. That stops people in their tracks. And it makes them think, of course they're not going to do anything. They might fine me. They might give me a $2,000 fine. Actually, it's a sad state. Actually, they should put my behind in jail. If you want to know the truth.
You realize this show is heard by a lot of people, including officers of the law. Don't push it.
Well, I'm more intrigued with him jumping 15 feet over a fence.
Yeah. And it's got 15 no trespassing signs. And it still has those signs on it, the radioactive signs that indicate it as a radioactive site. So there you go. Think about it. It gives you some food for thought.
Well, I want to know, before we go too far astray, does Bernadette appear in those 60 pages of the new novel you're starting?
No. The new novel is a C.J. Floyd novel. Okay. So the new novel is actually entitled Chugwater Blues. That's the title. Mm-hmm. And so it's Chugwater Blues, and Chugwater is a town in Wyoming as well. Most of the action doesn't take place in Wyoming. I shouldn't say most of it. Not all of the action takes place in Wyoming in the new novel, but it reintroduces my central mystery character, C.J. Floyd, who's the bail bondsman out of Denver, and he gets involved in a murder that takes him to Wyoming because his partner in his bail bonding business, Flora Jean Benson, who's a former Marine intelligence officer who served in Desert Storm, actually has her fiance killed, and he ends up killed in Wyoming, they think, and so they have to investigate up there. But most of that story actually takes place in Denver.
Okay.
I want to flip back to Estrada Pink Horse, if answering this is telling too much, then just say so, and you don't have to. But okay. Is there some sort of recognized significance, meaning, to someone being upside down and naked? I mean, it's within your book. Is there, you know, somebody who will see? Okay, then we can stop there if it's going to be.
Yeah, it is very, very significant. Very significant.
Okay.
I don't want to tell him.
No, you don't.
He's hanging upside down by his feet. These missile silos are hundreds of feet deep. Just think of a nuclear missile, how deep that has to go down into the earth. And the way you get into them is there's a secondary sort of trap door that takes you down into the silo so you can work on it. And you don't actually go down into where the warhead is. Mm-hmm. You go down adjacent to it about 40 feet away, and then you walk across the gangplank into the actual weapon itself. And so that's how that's actually where this guy was found. He was found in this secondary access, not actually where the warhead goes. It would have been too difficult for anybody to get down into that, but the secondary access is something that you could get into.
Okay, I'm going to leave it right there.
Okay.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO, and our guest is Dr. Robert Greer, and we're discussing his latest novel. Tell me this. When you did your research for flying, did you come across the name Betsy Coleman?
I did not. I did not. I don't know who she is. Was she a fighter pilot, or I don't know at all.
Okay, well, we'll discuss that later. I just wondered.
But one of the first African American women to be an aviator, so known for that.
Well, I sort of stuck with the current day fighter pilots. So I didn't know that she was actually the first African American woman fighter pilot. There are
I'm not sure a fighter pilot. I'm not sure about that. But that's why I said aviator, but not necessarily.
That's why.
Yeah.
I sort of left my research with fighter pilots and didn't go back and research the entire history, probably to my chagrin. But there are black female fighter pilots for sure. And there, when I did the research, there were three of them. There were about I think there were 13 pilots who were not African American, and so I don't know what their ethnicity was. The most famous one is a lady who ran for the Senate in Arizona. She's not African American, but she was probably the most famous one. She's a colonel, and she flew. She ended up flying F-18s. So most of the fighter pilots that are women initially flew what we call A-10 Warthogs. Those are for close air support, and so they come in and they're heavy armament aircraft that can take a lot of fire and not be downed. So most of them didn't originally fly F-15s, but they fly the 2000 supersonic jets now.
Oh.
And you know what my attitude is? They should be.
Exactly.
The level of research that you've done is, and that I'm sure you always, it's really impressive that, you know, in reading this book, that I think people can learn a lot just relying on the accuracy and the kind of care that you seem to have put into building this world, you know, building this fictional world for your characters. So,
yeah, it does take a fair amount of legwork to get one of these novels off the ground. And then you always run into people who know more than you. Like the, just now, I didn't know this. Was it Bessie? What was her last name?
Bessie Coleman.
Yeah, I'm going to go look that up as soon as we're off the phone because I didn't know who she was.
Well, when you're not researching for your novels, what kinds of things do you read?
I tend to read a lot of nonfiction because when if I read fiction, it tends to blend into my novels too much, and I'll end up sort of copying someone else or listening to their voice, and I don't want to do that. So I rarely read much fiction nowadays, unless I go back and read, you know, classical fiction. Then that doesn't seem to interfere with my thought processes. But contemporary fiction, I typically do not read. But I read a lot of nonfiction. I love to read about astrophysics and issues that have to do with planetary research and planetary discovery. That's those sorts of things. I'm really interested in sort of futuristic things, but not from the science fiction point of view. So more from the scientific, the true physics and astrophysics and mathematics of something. Recently, I've been looking at the probability of life on other planets. I've been reading a lot of that sort of stuff from the very sort of scientific and, as I said, not science fiction point of view.
Okay. About the new novel that you started, that you're 60 pages in on, when do you project that you will finish?
I'll go back to it late this summer, and so because I just finished that other novel, Jugwater Blues, with C.J. Floyd in it, so I've got a novel, as they say, in the can already, and so that will probably come out next year sometime, and so I'll go back to that novel with Bernadette and Cozy in it in late this summer, probably in August, and then start working on it again.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the concept is interesting, and so I hope I can get it done. When I stopped before, it was just because I had another task to do. I had to write that medical textbook over. So I've lost my train of thought right now, but once I start working on it, it'll all come back pretty easily, I think.
Now, the characters in your book, they speak to you?
I hear people say that all the time, that they often have a character that intrudes and takes over the writing process for them, or that they actually can hear the character's voice. But that doesn't happen for me. I think that's because when I'm writing, I'm more of a director than an actor or a player in the play. So since I'm the director of the event, they don't really speak to me. I just about tell everybody what to do. So all the characters don't get a chance to sort of tell me what to do. But I hear many of my author friends say that happens to them. I don't know what it is about me. I just don't. I always seem to be directing them and telling them what to do.
Well, I'm curious about this process. It seems like you're always writing something. I mean, some authors say, you know, rain, shine, whatever. They write for X amount of time every day.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just have a general idea that they want, they're going to do a book a year or whatever. How does that work for you in terms of, are you always, you know, except for editing medical textbooks or whatever, are you always in the process of writing your next work?
Yes, novel? I am. In this industry, your name goes away if you don't crank out a book a year. So you have to keep your name in the public eye. And so my rule of thumb is I turn out a book when I'm writing a novel. It has to be I can write a novel in 10 months. So I can write a book a year. And when I write one, I sit down and I write every day during the week for about 2 to 3 hours, and on the weekend about 5 hours on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
So it's a job. It's just exactly the same as a job.
But you have other jobs, right?
What's that?
I said, but then you have other jobs.
Yeah,
you have the ranch.
Yeah.
You are a professor. How do you fit this? Well, I mean, obviously you do, but still, really, how do you fit this around everything else?
Because I've been asked that before, and my answer is the same always, because I choose the things that I am interested in and I like to do,
okay.
And everything else becomes superfluous.
Okay.
So I don't look at television. I wouldn't even know what's on television, other than occasionally I'll watch the news. So I don't spend any time doing that. I don't spend any time gaming or doing the things that people cell phones and that sort of stuff thing. I got my first cell phone that's called a smartphone. I got that this year only because my secretaries and administrative assistants finally screamed, "You have to do it." Before that, I just had a flip phone, and the phone was, it's just a phone
to me. We understand.
It has no other function than that for me. So I discard, what happens is I tend to discard things that I see as superfluous. Now, that doesn't mean they are. They're just not of interest or great importance to me, but they may be of tremendous importance. I just don't typically involve myself.
And now that you say that, no, I don't mean to cut you off, but it just dawned on me. I remember we asked you this question before, because afterwards we were discussing the fact that, yeah, it really is a matter of choice, and that you've made certain choices. Also, we're getting very close to the end, so I want to make sure that, you know, everybody, we all have a chance for the last words, hello, or whatever is in it, like about the last 30 minutes that we have.
I just want to thank
you,
Dr. Greer, for coming back on the show.
Oh, I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm glad that you guys will have me on the show. That's the important part. So it's wonderful to be able to talk and get your voice out there, and hope that someone wants to read what you have to say.
And I say,
well, maybe we can get you off that ranch to come out here and sign some books.
I'll do that. I'll do that with the new book for sure, or with any book, really.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right.
You're quite welcome.
Okay. We have like a few seconds left, and there's just so much going on this summer. And while you have to prioritize, it's like the Blues Festival just ended, and someone gave me a flyer for the Albina Jazz Festival. And I took note of it because the someone was the gentleman, oh, now I'm going to blank out on his last name, Stephen, forgive me, the author of the Akee Tree, A-K-E-E Tree, because I'm always wondering, is it Akee or Aki? But he's a great genealogist, but he's also involved with the Albina Jazz Festival. It's coming up October 12th and 13th. So folks, keep your ears open for great cultural events happening around the city.
See you next month, August.
Bye-bye.
Farewell.